this is our first day of June session, and lovely day, some sunshine. Currently, the heat pump out there is going to be fixed, so it might warm up a little bit. And yeah, so really, really a lovely time. Being together, and I guess even after just a couple of rounds of sitting, I think we can start to feel our energy start to start to drop a little. And so it's really interesting practice. You know, they're saying at work, you know, going to be away for a few days. Where are you going? Meditation retreat. And everyone says, I had a really good relaxing time. It's, you don't quite know what it's about. I mean, yeah, we should be relaxed, but there's also, you know, quite a bit of attention and just that I guess the physicality of the body as well is something we don't we don't realize until we sit down. And so I just want to begin to kind of touch on this on our first day of session. Just around the basics, the basics of the practice. So, you know, when we sit down, you know, first of all, we encounter our body, and the posture is a means to be able to sit comfortably during this time, and so. It really, really pays dividends to really focus on how you're holding yourself. So, the main thing you really want to pay attention to is have a good relationship with your cushion. So it's not too high or too low to give you enough support, so that your pelvis can sit in a neutral position on top of the cushion that can then support the spine all the way through to the back of the neck. All the vertebrae are nicely stacked. You know, we tend sometimes to slump a little bit. You know, just be aware of using it. It requires a little bit of muscle to be able to maintain that upright. And then the head again, with the head's quite a heavy piece of equipment on top of your spine, so being aware that the slump always starts with the chin. And when the body is upright, then the breathing can happen more easily. You know, pay attention to the shoulders, so we're not kind of holding too much tension there. In essence, there's like a hook on top of your head, pulling you upright, and the rest of the body is relaxing down. So, and then we move into Kenhin from sitting, then just pay attention to the way the body moves again. So it's this one unbroken awareness, and all throughout the day, whether we're walking, chopping vegetables, working in the garden, lying down to sleep, just paying attention to what your bodily sensation is like, not particularly needing to judge it, but just that's our connection with this physical world. And then the mind, so really simple instructions for the mind. And sometimes during session we kind of get a bit confused about what we should be doing, what the purpose is. But really it's all about attention and awareness. And attention, normally just as a method, we pay attention to something. And that thing can be counting, it can be breath, it could be calm, could be this vast experience that we are. And that's really just all it is. You know, there's a certain kind of curiosity that comes out of paying attention to this too. But kind of, I always think about it, it's always good to cultivate a mind of curiosity during Zishin. Curiosity is kind of quite nice because it's a bit like, rather than kind of like, oh, I need to get this, it's a bit like, huh. So it's a bit of lightness during Zishin, and paying attention to the strangeness of life, the newness, the surprises that keep coming out of this cortex. So the practice is about, you know, when we drift off, when we start thinking about things, is to notice and to come back. And again and again and again. And that's basically all Zishin is, really. So if you, if it's during chanting, when you notice your mind drifts off, then you come back to the chanting. When you're eating, your mind drifts off, then you come back to the eating. When you're sitting and doing your meditation practice, when your mind drifts off, you come back to that. Really simple stuff. And simple, because it's simple, it allows us to just to really let go of any kind of artifice or needing to create something else, needing to find some other way through. But just to have that as the single thing that we do. You know, and the Buddha, you know, laid all this out as the you know, his first statement after awakening under the Bodhi tree, you know, saying, you know, wonder of wonders that all beings are perfect and complete as they are. And yet, you know, we fail to see that. So he really just lays it out right there. You know, and that perfection is not anything that we need to attain. As he says, you know, it's perfect and complete as we are, which is just as we are. The practice is about uncovering that perfection, which is layered over by heaps of thinking, really, heaps of conditioning, and heaps of wanting to find something else about plans, regrets, dreams, fantasies, longings, trying to work things out. And that's the amazing thing, when we come to Zishin, we kind of see this. I was awake for, I don't know, at least an hour last night. And it's kind of, it's fascinating just to watch that habit of mind. I don't normally need to have things to think about, but they just kind of come unbidden. It's like, wow, why? It's just this, and then the, of course, and so our practice is not to have a quiet mind, you know, but it's to in a sense let go of that thinking process, let go of attachment to thinking. The thoughts in themselves are what the mind does, you know, we excrete thoughts, it's like a gland. And so it's not about having a quiet mind, you know, it's about a different relationship to mind. Some of the old Zen teachers call this following thought and adding to thought, like adding frost to snow or putting your head on top of your own. It's like adding something extra. You can imagine, like, you've already got your own head, but you kind of put another one on top of your own. Or something like snow, and you add frost onto it because it kind of needs something more. You know, but it's perfect, just as it is. Yeah, and this is really the gift. The gift is our Zen. And it's a profound practice because, you know, human beings just don't do that. You know, we don't pay attention. And it's remarkable how your appreciation and consciousness shifts when you start just being consistent and start to pay attention. And this is the ability, this is the place to do it. I mean, we've got 4 days here, and so using this time well is really important. You know, it kind of feels quite hard at times. But it delivers dividends. But so on the way up here, we jumped in the car and switched on the national radio was on, and was all about mindfulness, which was quite coincidental. Jesse Mulligan was talking to some, I don't know, Sam someone, I can't
Sam
remember.
Harris.
Sam who?
Harris.
Sam Harris. Well, I don't know who Sam Harris is, but...
He's sort of a superstar American thinker who, you know, talks about everything from Islamic fundamentalism to mindfulness. He has talking tours. He's coming to New Zealand.
Right. Okay, yeah, and so he was talking about mindfulness and quite interesting. It was quite apropos, and just kind of, I guess from that aspect of the just our layering of thoughts and ideas and certain kind of suffering that we add to our basic life experience, and when we start paying attention. To a direct experience, then the that kind of thoughts and hanging on tends to relax. And mindfulness is a really interesting word because it's obviously an English word, and we tend to think of mindfulness as being a thing, you know, me being mindful of something, and that's the practice, you know, because it's what we can do. Talking about this thing here and that thing there, there's a relationship. Yeah, but mindfulness is actually an interesting word, and it's that kind of, the mind is full. You know, when the mind is full, there is no one paying attention to, you know, to anything. You know, it's like there's that phrase, you know, there's nowhere to put this gigantic body. You know, who are we but the sun and the physical sensations and thoughts that arise, you know, the true mind full is not something being aware of something. You know, it's just this vast or sport or whatever it is, experience. And that's what the Buddha and all the teachings are around, is also this aspect of no self. And no self is something that we encounter when we let go of thinking too. So, you know, it's the, so mindfulness, you know, in a certain sense has benefit as a practice for improving various aspects of our lives and our relationships with others, but on a deeper level, you know, it's really about, this is where it kind of moves into the religious rather than the secular. Religious in a sense, or spiritual in the sense that it's not for any kind of secular gain. You know, it's about encountering who you are on a level that is beyond good, bad, indifferent, peaceful. So, I thought I'd read a koan today as well. And this is a good story. It's a good Zen story, and it's about set in 9th century China, around about then, Tang Dynasty China, and it's a story about a relationship between a number of monks. And when we chant the lineage in the morning, there's a Greg, did you put arrows around?
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost all of them.
You might notice there's a couple of little arrows around two names, because they're put around the wrong way, and it's about these two people. So the fifth ancestor and the sixth ancestor in China, and we've got them around the wrong way. I don't know how it happened, but anyway, the fifth is down the sixth, and so we chant them backwards. And the story is about, so what happens is the sixth ancestor's name in Chinese is Hui Ning, and his teacher is Hong Jin, or my Chinese isn't that great in pronunciation. Obai. What am I going to have to stick with one language? I'll stick with the Chinese. Anyway, so young Hui Ming travels, he comes from the south of China, and he travels all the way to the temple of Huang Mei in North China. And he goes there to study with this famous teacher who's called the Fifth Ancestor. So he's basically the fifth kind of major Zen teacher in China after Bodhidharma brought Zen from India. And so he goes to practice with Huang Mei, and they have this little bit of an interaction first off, where Huang Mei kind of notices something in this young fella and says, you know, where are you from? He says, I'm from the south. He says, oh, didn't you know people from the south, basically barbarians, don't have Buddha nature. And Hui Ming says, basically, you know, I may be from the south and you're from the north, but there is no difference in our Buddha nature. And Huang Mei thinks this is a pretty good response, but he's an illiterate southerner, so he doesn't want to, you know, put him up there with all the other monks who've been practicing forever, so he sends him to the rice shed to sift rice. And then there's a competition to pick the next ancestor. I guess Huang Mei's getting quite old, and they need to pick the next head of the monastery. So they have had this competition, and Huang Mei says, whoever can write a poem that expresses their understanding, I will judge the poems that are presented, and whoever's got the best poem, I will mark as my next successor. So all the monks, there's the head monk, and the head monk has been there a very long time, very accomplished practitioner. And so everyone thinks, well, we'll just leave it to the head monk, he'll put up a verse. So the head monk thinks, and he's not totally confident, but anyway, he puts up a verse on the wall, and it says, the body is the Bodhi tree, the mind is like a clear mirror. Moment by moment, wipe the mirror carefully, let there be no dust upon it. Which is really about practice, you know, so it's about practice. And all the monks think this is great, and they're all chanting it around the monastery. And then Hui Ning hears it, and he kind of thinks it's not quite right. And, he thinks he could do better. And he doesn't know how to write, so he's illiterate. And so he asks another monk to write it on the wall beside the other head monk's poem. So the head monk's poem again, the body is the Bodhi tree. So this thing is the vessel of awakening. The mind is like a clear mirror. Yeah, absolutely. It's nothing, it reflects everything, just as it is. Moment by moment, wipe the mirror carefully, let there be no dust upon it. So that's really about, you know, letting go of thought coming back to this clear mirror. So it's a wonderful poem. And then Hui Ning, so it says, Aiken Rushi quotes him, he says, when Hui Ning heard a monk reciting the poem, he recognized immediately the limitation of its author's realization. So then he writes out a poem, he gets another monk to write up the poem, and what he says is, Bodhi really has no tree, the mirror too has no stand. From the beginning, there's nothing at all. Where can any dust alight? Well, that's a wonderful. I mean, they're both great, actually. You know, but he kind of one-ups them in that competitive sense. So one really is about practice, about how we practice. It's about that thing that we call mindfulness. You know, it's about being mindful of something, me doing something to achieve a certain result. So that's what we're taught, and you have to do that. But then Hui Ning kind of steps back and basically opens the doors wide and pushes the container out to the ends of the universe. You know, where can any dust alight? All these random thoughts and dreams and desires. Perfect. The pain and suffering,
that too.
The dust, yes. So, so Hui Ming sees this and finds out who wrote it, and he just rubs it out. Not good enough. You know, and it's like it's because he knew what would happen if he'd said, well, this is the best poem, and this dude. He's turned out this illiterate barbarian is going to be the next successor. You can imagine the, you know, in any kind of workplace, if someone just rocks up and then they're appointed, you know, chief executive or whatever the next day and wouldn't work. So, but he knows that Hui Ning is really the has the smarts and the realization to be the next successor. So secretly he meets with them and basically confers the robe and bowl, which are the markers of the transmission, to Hui Ning, and says, look, you know, basically I'm passing on my mind seal to you, but you really need to get out of here, because if the other monks find out, they're going to kill you. Tough times in China. So he rows them across the river and says, you better go now, because when these other folks find out what's happened, then they're going to come after you. And so he takes off. And then Monk Nyo, they find out about this in the morning. The monastery's in uproar. Monk Nyo finds out what's happened, and he's might have been an old general or something like that, and he takes off after him. And you can't imagine this kind of two monks chasing each other across the wide prairies, and then finally they come to he catches up to him on the top of a mountain called Dayu Peak, and this is where the koan starts. This is basically this koan. It's all kind of pre-story, and then the actual koan itself starts here. And Nakan Roshi titles this as Neither Good Nor Evil is the title of the koan. So the koan, the case, the main case. So the sixth ancestor was pursued by Ming, the head monk, as far as Dayu Peak. The teacher, the sixth ancestor, who's Hui Ning, seeing Ming coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, this robe represents the Dharma. There should be no fighting over it. You may take it back with you. Ming tried to lift it up, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Shivering and trembling, he said, I come for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please open the way for me. That's right, because Hui Ning is not a monk. The teacher said, don't think good, don't think evil. At this very moment, what is the original face of Ming, the head monk? In that instant, Ming had great satori, awakening. Sweat ran from his entire body. In tears, he made his bow, saying, beside these secret words and secret meanings, is there anything of further significance? Hui Ning said, what I have just conveyed to you is not secret. If you reflect on your own face, whatever is secret will be right there with you. Ming said, though I practiced at Huang Mei with the assembly, I could not truly realize my original face. Now, thanks to your pointed instruction, I am like someone who drinks water and knows personally whether it is cold or warm. Lay brother, you are now my teacher. Hui Ning said, if you can say that, then let us both call Huang Mei, the fifth ancestor, our teacher. Maintain your realization carefully. So this koan really is—it's quite long, but and has a really good story beforehand. But really, it's kind of points to that question: don't think good, don't think evil. At this moment, what is the original face of Ming, the head monk? What is your original face? An original face, I guess, is I guess Chinese or a way of saying, what is your true nature? Who are you? What is the original face you had before your parents were born? So who are you right now? Well, it's always right now, isn't it? I guess that's the embedding frost the snow, really. The man realizes something here, and then he says, beside these secret words and secret meanings, is there anything of further significance? And then Hui Ying says, what I have conveyed to you is not secret. If you reflect on your own face, whatever is secret will be right there with you. And that's he has it just there. It's not secret. And that again comes back to that practice element that there's nothing we need to find. It's this. And yet, we cover it up. So the fifth ancestor and those two poems are beautiful kind of expositions of both practice but also the expression of this experience, of this life. So over the next 4 days, to hold that in mind. Both those two, wonderful poems about practice and realization, in a sense. We are continually wiping the mirror clean. As our practice, that's what we actually do. It's like saying, someone will say, "Well, just be one with something." You can't be one with something. What's that word? Tautology or whatever. It's not, you got two things that can't be one. It's not a thing you can do, but you can practice not being two. And so that's what the head monk is talking about, practicing not being two, but on the level of faith or the level of what you're standing on or standing in is Hui Ying's poem. Where can dust alight? And that where can dust alight gives us the confidence to practice. If we were just wiping dust clean, you might go, I've been wiping dust clean for the last 50 years and so what? So where can dust alight is really the thing that kind of speaks from our heart. And we have that inkling, we have that faith, otherwise we wouldn't be here. We talk about the absolute and relative, so we're always talking about those two sides, the light and the dark, and the form and emptiness. Yeah. So, encouragement. 4 days to go. You really use this time well. Moment by moment. Enjoy it too. We close.